The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Pulse on CFRO Co-op Radio, broadcasting out of the downtown east side of Vancouver. I'm John Z, and today I speak with John Su, who runs Indigenous Innovations, which operates out of 122 East Hastings Street. Indigenous Innovations aims to help First Nations break down barriers to accessing quality healthcare. They also help feed the community and provide naloxone kits to those in the downtown east side through their First Nations-driven programs. John Su is passionate and dedicated to this cause, and together we discuss the barriers Indigenous people face when accessing healthcare and how Indigenous Innovations helps bridge connections between First Nations people and the medical care system. We also discuss how racism within the medical care system is alive and well in 2021 and how Indigenous Innovations wants to bring reconciliation for First Nations people to the medical care system. This episode was recorded in a cafe, so please excuse any minor background sounds you may hear. All right, can you please introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, and what Indigenous Innovations represents?
My name is John Su from downtown Eastside, Vancouver, and we are representing Indigenous Innovations YVR. And what we do in downtown Eastside is we help First Nations navigate the medical system.
Okay, and how does Indigenous Innovations support Indigenous people to overcome barriers to healthcare?
Number one thing that we do differently is that we take the time to build trust and relationship. So how do we do that? We walk the streets, we have outreach teams, and we become the familiar face. Once we become the familiar face, there's an element of trust there, and we just talk to people, we just make friends. And when our clients are ready to ask us for medical help, they'll ask. But the whole point of what we do is we want to rebuild the trust in the medical system for First Nations and help them navigate a system that hasn't been Indigenous friendly for many, many decades.
And so you build a relationship with the Indigenous communities, and then how does that reflect into the medical care system? Are you building relationships with people in the medical care system as well?
Yes, exactly. So what we do is we find trusted medical service providers that give their word to and promise to give an extra layer of compassion when serving First Nation clients so that we can always guarantee a quality of service. But more importantly is creating a relationship where if anything goes wrong, we can call the owner and find out what happened so that our clients are never in the situation when a medical provider has pretty much kicked them to the curb or brushed them away and screwed them over. That will never happen working with us.
Okay, so you're kind of like the connector between Indigenous people and their families and communities and the healthcare system. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, essentially we are the connector, the bridge, but more specifically for First Nations, we are that advocate, that liaison, that trusted resource that if they work with us, we will take care of them.
Okay, and you started out initially Indigenous Innovations in Edmonton, is that right?
That's correct. Me and my partner, Adrian Beaverbones from the O'Cheese Band, started in Edmonton, and I moved out to Vancouver, like every good Hollywood movie, in the name of love.
And so how long now have you been in Vancouver?
I've been here for 5 years now. We've been working as Indigenous Innovations for the last 2.5 years.
Okay. And just to be clear, Indigenous Innovations is a for-profit organization, correct?
Yes, that's correct. We are a for-profit organization. All of our clients know that. And yeah, that's probably the number one reason why we're able to help our clients the way that we do.
Okay, and what separates you from being a for-profit from a non-profit, which a lot of the agencies in the downtown Eastside community are, where they rely on government funding or other funding streams? How does that separate yourself from being a for-profit to other agencies in the downtown Eastside?
So the number one benefit of being for-profit is that we don't count on the government or anyone for funding. We're a business, so our funding is self-generated, which also means that nobody tells us how to help people. And if you talk to anybody in the social work industry, the number one issue with agencies is their ability to help people because of they want to avoid liability. Whether you do the social work or the medical field, everyone and the way they're designed, they're first designed to avoid liability, second designed to help the client.
Okay. So you're not having to kind of jump through those similar hoops?
Absolutely not. If we have a way to help the client, as long as it's not illegal, it's done. It's one of those things where if your intention is to help somebody, how could you not do it right? Right? And for somebody to make rules about how to properly help somebody, that makes no sense.
And so who pays for the services? Is it the clients themselves? Is it the medical system? Who actually pays for the services that you offer?
So for our clients, it's an absolute free service. And how we get our bills paid is the medical providers that we refer them to, we are a marketing and promotions company for them. We've only been around 2.5 years, so not everybody pays us, but hopefully one day they see the value that we bring and then everyone pays us.
And what are you noticing as being some of the main things people need help with?
The two biggest barriers to accessing healthcare for First Nation clients are psychological and social. Those are the two biggest barriers. We've got tons of resources, but it's the lack of trust in the medical system and the beliefs around racism and discrimination over the decades that makes the medical system like the devil for First Nations.
Okay. Explain what are some reasons that an Indigenous person would feel uncomfortable or unsafe going to a hospital or receiving medical care on their own terms?
Top complaints are racism and discrimination, being labeled as a drunk or as a drug addict, being ignored and disrespected, talked down to, being basically not acknowledged or listened to. And, I think a big thing of that has a lot to do with history, but also how the system works. The medical system, it's designed to treat you like a number because they want to keep it all professional and all, everything above board. And they have these fancy terms that nobody understands. And they just treat you like a number, and it's like a business. And that's why, if you're treated like that, you don't feel like a human. And when you go to get medical help, you're not in an inspired state. You're at a low point in your life. You don't need a robot to usher you through. You need someone to actually listen to what's going on, not just pill you up or here's a prescription, get out of my office, right? And a lot of our clients say that their doctors do not listen or label them as drug addicts or alcoholics without doing any basic research, or just straight abuse, and they just tell them, you're a drug addict, I'm not helping you. So when I hear stuff like that, that's not okay. And yeah, that's something that we're making a big fight against, is abuse like that. Most of the medical system, though, I'll say, a lot of people who work in it, they're good people. There's just a few bad apples that we need to have removed and to have their license suspended.
What inspired you to get involved in something like this and to become an advocate for Indigenous people in the healthcare system?
It first all started off as a business, but as you start to understand the history of what First Nations went through, the human nature kicks in, right? Everyone finds that opportunity that they can make a difference in other people's lives. And when I seen the opportunity to do this with my partner for First Nations, there was absolutely no way that we could turn that down. So it started as a financial business venture, but now it's an inspired mission that myself and Adrian and everybody that works with us have committed our lives to changing how First Nations are treated in the medical system. You can basically say, we as citizens, Canadians, are going to bring reconciliation to the medical system for First Nations.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah, it's a bold statement, but we are committed to it. We know we can absolutely do it, and it's about finding the right Indigenous allies to make it happen.
And this is a running theme that I've heard in some of the interviews I've conducted with other people in the downtown east side, is that people who are from this area and are in need of medical treatments often don't feel comfortable, like you mentioned, going to the hospital care clinics due to how they're treated and stigmatized once they arrive. And in some cases, it's even how they are treated on the way there from the paramedics and the EMT responders who are meant to pick them up, which is terrible to think of, because as a white settler here myself, that's never something that I have to really worry about. If I need medical care, I go to the hospital, I receive it, and I receive it rather fairly.
Yes, it's quite sad, and I think that's how those things happen is, you know, we're all humans at the end of the day. And one thing I think is a failure of the medical system is their inability to offer mental counseling for those that day-to-day deal with overdoses, day-to-day deal with people spitting on them, day-to-day deal with people who are not at the best position of their life. And those people, you know, those medical providers, they need medical help. And I think the system doesn't allow or provide that. And then you have people who are racist and bitter about their job because day after day, they're dealing with, you know, the same issue. And we can say, well, that's their job, everything else, which I totally agree. Yes, you have a job, but let's not forget that everybody is a human being. Everyone has feelings. Everyone has different experiences. And the system, you know, I guess, should provide help for the mental trauma that, you know, their service providers who are working with a vulnerable community experience day to day. And I think that's a big issue in a lot of businesses and everywhere else. The people who sit in the offices and make all the policies are disconnected from what's happening on the ground. So they make policies for problems, people, and situations that they don't actually understand. So it's like a hypothetical solution on a problem you don't actually understand. No wonder why that stuff's so messed up. And I think that's the, you know, a big thing that really is frustrating and bothersome to me, you know, when I think we're in 2021, and I think 3 years ago, there's a major report called In Plain Sight that they've just recently discovered or maybe finally substantiated that there's racism in the medical system. Oh my God, isn't that a shocker? How many millions of dollars did they spend to do that report to finally discover that? And you got to ask yourself, how is that possible that these so-called medical professionals still have so much racism in the medical system? How is that possible in 2021? And I thought about that. How is that possible? And what I realized is the reason that there's so much racism in the medical system is because there's no outlet to address those issues. The medical system has now just recently admitted that there exists. So you got to think about it. If you never acknowledge a problem, how do you ever solve it? And then now the medical system's finally admitting it, right? And then another thing is all this racism and all this documentation, how long did that take? This is 2021. And we have these associations designed specifically for indigenous people who are run by the regular government system. Another big reason is they've designed a medical system that is not indigenous friendly. They've designed a medical system where they expect the client to do as they want. And if they don't want to do that, then they don't get no medical treatment. And any human being knows if you design something, no matter how good it is, people will not use it. And that's what differentiates us from First Nations Health Authority or the Indigenous teams at St. Paul is we went to the people. We asked questions. We designed a system around how they act, their lifestyles, you know, and we took the time to find out what's really going on. And our clients use it. Our clients feel heard. Our clients feel helped. And we've only been doing this for 2.5 years. So do I believe that the people are inherently bad in the medical system? Absolutely not. Very good people, lots of them. There's a few bad apples. But more importantly is we got to look at the system that allowed this to happen for how long now. It's the system that facilitates that. You talk to medical providers, doctors, nurses, anyone. Their biggest frustration is how the system doesn't change and they just expect everyone to behave in a certain way. Even if it helps the client or even if it's something that hurts the client, that's just the way they do it. And you have these egos of, you know, the social and bureaucratic drama of unit managers being punished by doctors for speaking out, right? There is no whistleblower processes in place to protect the whistleblower because, you know what? The manager writes your schedule. If it doesn't get to the right people, you can lose your job. And that's the whole system of, how to say, pressure and how you keep, you know, I guess people who think differently or want change in their place. No one will sacrifice their own livelihood their own, you know, family to stand up for somebody else, right? And that's how associations in the greater good stamp out individual opinions.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily, like you said, that all the nurses and the frontline workers are racist, but they're working within a system that is systemically racist and that is prioritizing non-Indigenous people. Is that a good, like, a summary, would you say?
And I wouldn't say prioritizing, but they're in a system where people complain higher up and nothing's done. If anything, they are reprimanded for correcting a senior teammate or making a disturbance, right? So change doesn't happen, or nor is it friendly in those environments. So, you know, you as a person, you keep complaining. There's only so much that you can complain, right? Now you're a nuisance to everybody. So if that's a system that is, you know, management and everything else, what's the point, right? You lose faith. And it's just like how Indigenous have lost faith in the medical system. How many times did they cry racism? How many times they cry discrimination? And nobody hears them. Nobody believes them. So why would you cry, you know? Now you're the fool if you would keep crying to people or an association that doesn't listen, right?
For sure. And building off of what you were saying about the programs that are out there, because it's not like there's a lack of resources or a lack of programs. Funding goes to these programs, but it's if it's not user-friendly and if it's not something that's safe and comfortable, doesn't matter how great it is and how well-staffed it is and how pretty it is, people won't come to it if they don't feel comfortable and safe using those services.
100%. A lot of what I see is people who want to make differences, but because of their team or their management, they're powerless because they're one person. And I see a lot of people in the industry, they're just there to get paychecks. They actually don't really care about wanting to help people. They're like, here, that's the company rules, too bad. And it's just one of those things where, yeah, you have a good job that you've never had before, and here you are in your office. Why would you sacrifice that, right? And make life for yourself harder. And I think that's kind of the thing that, yeah, is really screwing up the social work industry, is these ego games and the ways that we used to do things, and let's be polite and not, you know, call people out.
And do you physically go to medical appointments yourself with your clients?
Most of the time we don't. The odd time where somebody really needs it, we will. Just because we have too many clients, it doesn't make practical sense to do that. But yeah, if a client really needs it and I can tell they have anxiety and they just need somebody to go with them, then I will. Right. Or our team member will drive. We've done that before where client didn't know how to catch the bus and they need dentures. I just picked them up, threw their walk in the back of my car, took them to the appointment, and then had the denturist call me when the appointment's done, picked them up.
And then, so you're also speaking on behalf of your clients to medical professionals, is that right?
100%. What we do to make things so easy is the client doesn't have to say anything. We give all the information. We explain everything. All the client has to do is show up. And I think a lot of the uncomfortableness and awkwardness ends up in all of those fancy medical questions that people ask that clients don't understand. And, you know, everyone's been there when somebody's using big words that you don't understand, talking in ways that are foreign to you. You don't want to look like the dummy, right? And never mind in the medical system, which you don't already trust. Right, so you're already uncomfortable, and then now you're confused.
Do you have a background in medicine at all or in healthcare?
Absolutely not, but I have one client who calls me doctor when I walk around downtown Eastside.
So how did you get to understand all the terms? And I mean, it's even confusing sometimes to me, right? Like, so how did you come to be somebody that feels confident to advocate for people who find that very difficult to manage?
I actually don't understand the terms myself, but I keep it simple. It's, we need to help people. What information do you need to help them? And let's just keep it simple like that. You don't need to know all of this other stuff. Just ask what you need, keep it simple, and take care of the client. And that's how we do things. It's simple and effective. It's not complex. It's not fancy words. You look at our marketing and everything else, it's in very simple language, and our clients understand what it is.
In closing, I'm just curious, kind of switching gears from general Indigenous innovations and the healthcare system. I'm just curious in general, what's something about the downtown Eastside that you feel is missed by people who aren't down here ever or are just passing through occasionally? What stands out to you about the downtown Eastside?
So the number one thing for me that stands out about the Downtown East Side is that I have more authentic relationship and connections down here than anywhere else in my life. People down here don't have houses, monies, fancy clothes, titles to hide and pretend to be. Down here, it's people mano a mano. When I say hi to somebody, they're either going to look at me and say hi and acknowledge and, hey, what's up, man? Or they're not even going to look at me. But at least it's an authentic interaction as opposed to your typical world. Hey, girlfriend, how you doing? Where you know the chick's like full of shit.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time today, Jonsu. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with us that I maybe didn't touch on?
Probably the last thing we want to hear is we're doing some big stuff to make a change in the First Nations community. So we're looking for Indigenous allies. So if you want to volunteer, you're a medical professional, you got some ideas on how we can make big change, right now is the time that us Canadians stand behind the people of this land and not wait for the government to bring reconciliation, because you know their track record sucks. And anytime reconciliation or making things right with people ever happens, it's people helping people. So I'm doing a call out. If you want to be an Indigenous ally or you want to make a difference to First Nations in Vancouver, give me a call, 778-806-6993, or email me at indigenousinov@gmail.com, or find us at 122 East Hastings Street.
We'll be sure to include all the links for people to find you in the episode description as well. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
That was my conversation with Jonsu from Indigenous Innovations. To find out more, visit their contact details listed in this episode's description. Once again, I'm John Z, and you've been listening to The Pulse on CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.